Hello and welcome to the Android Central podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, we are talking about Disney Plus and its new international offshoot, Star. We have Phil Nicholson, former editor-in-chief of Android Central and now editor of whattowatch.com, to walk us through all of the streaming happenings. Because Phil, you are immersed in this in a way that I don't think any of us are.
I used to play with phones for a living. Now I watch TV for a living.
Yeah, it could be worse. We'll also talk a little bit about Android 12, the actual Android 12, which dropped mere minutes after we finished recording the last episode of the podcast. If you listen to that one, you know we got some of it right and we got some of it wrong. But now we'll talk about the stuff that we got right because it's actually out and we can play with it. It's the first developer preview. And we'll talk a little bit about the Pixel 5a because it leaked. Sort of. We're not actually sure because it looks exactly like the Pixel 4a, just slightly bigger. I don't know. Ara, you can walk us through that. So to help us along with Phil, Jerry Hildenbrand, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good.
It was 67 degrees here yesterday.
I'm not even going to speak.
It was 83 degrees here yesterday. Watch that
wash all over me. Nope, enough. I'm not going to get into this. It's like 44 here today, which is actually balmy, but not enough. Anyway.
Hey, guess what it is here? Guess.
What?
A few degrees lower than it is here.
It's 69 degrees.
Hey, nice.
Welcome. Let's get right into it because we got two distinct parts and then Phil can choose whether he wants to stick around for the second part because you're not really an Android guy anymore, but we're gonna try to make you one for this show. Anyway, Phil, what is going on? How are you? What's new? How's life? How's What to Watch?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine.
I was debating whether I want to put the beta on my Pixel. What are we up to? Five.
We're up to five.
I just totally blanked. It's sitting right here in front of me. I was like, should I put the beta on it right in the middle of the show? That'd be old school.
I mean, you can flash it from a browser these days, so.
Yeah, it's pretty magical, actually. You can just plug in your phone.
It's not as hard as it used to be.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm running a super awesome team of you know, a couple full-timers and a whole bunch of freelancers who are far better at reviewing shows and movies than I am. And it's a lot of fun to read, and especially these days with some of the stuff they're doing. I'm learning so much about the shows I'm watching. It's almost to the point where, like, we're watching two different shows. It's incredible.
All right. So I wanted to have you on for a while because we knew that Star was launching February 23rd, which, as we're recording this yesterday, I am in Canada. So I have access to it along with Australia, New Zealand, parts of Europe, and Singapore. So a few countries have this new section on their Disney Plus app. And it's a big deal. It's a big deal for me because we get like all the Wes Anderson movies. It's a big deal for some other people because they get like 24. I know Richard Devine from Windows Central was tweeting about how much he loves 24 and Jack Bauer's back, baby, and all that. So I just wanted to talk about where we are in terms of streaming. I know Disney or Marvel, I guess Disney, made a bunch of announcements this morning on when the next set of MCU and Star Wars shows will be released on Disney Plus. And then there's all the other services, right? There's HBO Max, there's Peacock, there's Discovery Plus, there's Paramount Plus, I guess, if you want to call that new. And all this leads to confusion for people who just want to find the show to watch. So let's start with Disney. They now have 95 million subscribers. They are doing really, really well in terms of expansion into new countries. This new Star launch is a big deal. So give us the TLDR, if you will, of why Star launched now and why it's a big deal for people outside the US.
Lawyers. It's always the lawyers.
Yeah, I was going to say, why did it launch now? Because this is when they could finally agree on, okay, here's where the contracts end so we can pick things up.
Yeah, the really oversimplified version is this. In the United States, we have Hulu, and Hulu has basically everything that's not under the five pillars of Disney Plus, and those are Disney, Star Wars, Marvel, Pixar, and National Geographic. Anything outside of that, you generally, what?
You're forgetting, well, I was going to say, you're forgetting the pillar of 20th Century Fox.
And 20th Century Fox, which is on Hulu. So really, partially. Anything outside of those five pillars in the U.S. we'll find on Hulu. Yes, there are exceptions. The problem is Hulu is not anywhere in the rest of the world. It's a, you know, decidedly American phenomenon. And so Disney needed a way to get all this content to everybody else. And hey, by the way, they get to charge a little more for it too. And that became Star. The way they, you know, first announced it, when did they do it? Yeah, one of the earnings calls last year. It was a little like just weird. I didn't even fully understand it at the time, and it took a little while to sink in. And then their developer, or not developer days, their investor days in December or November, December, whenever that was, you know, explained it a little better. And it really is just that simple. If it's content you can probably find on Hulu here in the U.S., it's going to be on Star everywhere else.
So, given that Disney bought 20th Century Fox, they bought that from Fox, which was previously a shareholder in Hulu. Disney is now the majority shareholder of Hulu. Why can't they just bring Hulu to the rest of the world? What is that? I mean, I don't know the brand.
Well, who owns Hulu isn't the issue there, although Disney now entirely owns Hulu, if I'm correct, right, Phil? Didn't they finish buying the last pieces of Hulu like 2 years ago?
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, and there might be somebody with a little sliver, but it's a Disney joint.
Well, it's still partially owned by Comcast, but they're buying it slowly over the next few years.
Right.
Yeah, that was an agreement that was made a couple of years ago, but that's why Comcast is like, okay, all of our stuff is leaving Hulu at this date because we will no longer have a share in it, and it's all going to Peacock. But yeah, the reason that Hulu didn't exist in all these other countries was media streaming laws and like entertainment and streaming laws vary by country by country, and it takes a lot of money to get the rights to a decent amount of shows in places other than the U.S. So it was a matter of Hulu didn't really have the time or the money to spend on investing in trying to build up a catalog in other countries. The only other country that Hulu is in outside of the United States is Japan, and I'm not sure how much longer it's going to be there since they're probably going to roll it into Star. But it's Disney had the clout to roll to throw around, but Disney also already had rights to a lot of these things, or at the very least, they could end contracts and have the rights back.
Right. So it's just easier to bring a new subdomain or umbrella underneath Disney Plus, put all the 20th Century Fox content in there, call it Star, and make it a separate kind of expansion for everybody who already has Disney Plus.
Well, Star is Disney Plus for grown-ups.
It's right? Honor to Huawei's, you know, proper phones.
Not anymore, sort of. But that's a good analogy.
Well, yeah, that's true.
All right, so we have Star. It's got all the 20th Century Fox stuff, I think.
It's got more than that. That's also where a lot of, like, ABC television stuff ended up. It's also where a bunch of other, like, indie stuff that Disney and Fox had bought up over the years. Anything Fox Searchlight has ended up in there. That's why it's a huge collection of content. I'm amazed that they were able to get the international rights for those together quickly enough for Star for the international launches.
So the question I have is Disney Plus going to host new content in Star? Is this where they're going to compete with Netflix and HBO for adult viewership? Or are they still kind of not really aiming at that audience?
No, actually, I think you've got that right. And it's going to get a little weird because content's going to vary by country. But you can see that a little bit in the release lists. You get stuff that is decidedly more adult in there. And part of that is just from the content that's coming out of those houses in the first place. If you look at specifically FX stuff that's on, you know, here it's called FX on Hulu. It is. I don't know that I'd go so far as to say it's R-rated, but it's pretty damn close.
FX is definitely not child-friendly content.
Yeah.
For like 95% of it. Like, isn't FX where Archer lives?
Yeah, FX is an Archer, Archer is an FX original, sort of. But yeah, look at the new exclusive stuff like FX on Hulu. Like, Devs was one I loved last year. I thought it was excellent right up until the end, and it went a little off the rails. Mrs. America was on there as well. I mean, there's stuff that you wouldn't even otherwise necessarily see on cable, but that they're streaming it in that fashion lets them do, you know, just a little more than they otherwise would have. And it's not something that you would see on Disney Plus. So this gives them another conduit for that stuff as well.
Yeah, and the branding for original content is also going, it's going to vary by the audience category, because, like, anything that's Marvel or Star Wars is not going to be listed under the Star brand, period. If it belongs to one of those tentpoles, it's still going to be Disney Plus branded. And everything Star is going to have the both labels at the bottom whenever they're advertising it. But it's a matter of, okay, if we're going to do an original series, if it's PG or if it's PG 13 or below, it'll probably be Disney Plus branded. And if it's, well, actually, no, not PG 13.
No,
if it's PG
no,
or
that's,
below,
that's, not it
that's
at
Disney.
All. Yeah.
And PG 13 and up will probably be Star. Because that's like, yeah, Love Victor ended up in Star 2, didn't it?
Yes. And that was a Hulu joint. I mean, again, it's that simple. If it's not under the traditional Disney Plus umbrella, you're going to find it on Star. I wouldn't overthink it any more than that.
Right. So my question here is, Hulu is this sort of pocket of really, it's a super diverse set of content, right? You have a ton of original animated stuff. You have some really good, you know, as you said, R-rated or close to R-rated dramas. You have some really good original comedies. And because of the distribution of Hulu, because people consider Hulu a legacy streaming brand in the U.S., my question is, with the expansion of Star, right, the way that I think about something like Ethos as an example on Netflix, where Netflix has all of this user data, and they're really doing a good job trying to bring international audiences to U.S. content and U.S. content to international audiences. And because Netflix owns the distribution rights to all of these originals, it can do that. Will Disney, now that it has Star in a handful of countries with its own unique watching cultures, will we start seeing more internationalized adult-oriented programming? Or is this really just going to be, here, we now have a place for most of our Hulu content and a couple of other offshoots from ABC that may not have been able to live anywhere else?
We already have some international programming that's set for Star in individual countries. We're not hearing about it as much in the U.S. and Canada, because I don't think they have any Canadian Star exclusives yet. There is some localized content that will be coming to these markets. It's just, it's going to take a little bit of time. Like, we only had, like, a couple of Disney Plus originals in the first year. Same thing is going to happen with the Star originals. We're not going to see as many of them this first year, and then they're going to really ramp up next year and the year after, I think.
Okay. Do you think there's a downside, Phil, to Disney not necessarily hiding Star content underneath the Disney Plus umbrella, but that Star is not a standalone service? Do you think there is any downside to Disney in the long run for that?
That's a good question, because you're really just talking about discoverability at that point.
Right.
And, you know, if you have a barrier to entry that is install this whole other app versus something that they already have on 95 million, not necessarily 95 million devices. They have 95 million accounts worldwide already. That's a really interesting question. I don't know. And then you got to go a little further, because Latin America is going to have something called Star Plus, which actually is a whole nother subset of content that we're not going to get anywhere else. They're going to get live sports on there that we're not going to get. So it really gives them some flexibility within the existing Disney brand, which, you know, no matter what they're going to do, Disney itself is going to be bigger than anything else, right? It's going to be bigger than Star. It's bigger than Hulu. So it makes sense to put it under that.
And just in terms of 20th Century Fox, or I guess it's, what's it called, that 21st Century?
No, 20th Century? Just 20th Century. Yeah.
Anyway, whatever it's called now, the movie publishing branch of that now is now owned by Disney as well. Do you think that, like, I see the, you know, there's a lot of really good movies on Star, at least here in Canada, right? There's the Wes Anderson stuff, there's The Shape of Water, a lot of the Coen Brothers films, you know, Die Hard, Speed, like classic action films, Office Space, the first Borat movie. So there is a bit of everything for everybody. I'm wondering, do we see Disney shaping the movie output at all differently because it's now found an audience for digital first, first day publishing? I know that we had Mulan as an experiment. We have what's the new one? Raya and the
Raya and the Last Dragon.
Raya and the Last Dragon coming soon, which will also be on premiere, right? There's some data here to back up that Disney can put day one releases on its services. Do you think that will extend to Star as well? And we might get some HBO Max competition with some big name releases, or do you not see that happening?
I don't know that you'd put it two levels down like that. Again, you're going to have to look at where does it fall in the hierarchy, right? Is it a Disney Plus tentpole? If not, then how do you promote it?
It's also a matter of how the contracts around individual films are structured. Because, like, they keep pushing Black Widow because Black Widow's contracts were written in a way that doesn't allow it to be launched on Disney Plus first. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure we would have had it at Christmas.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's consider that a legacy release because that was all written before the time of COVID.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, they're dropping the first trailer for the next Pixar movie tomorrow. They have specifically not said whether or not it's going to be in theaters only or if it's going to be a Disney Plus release. They've just said coming summer 2021 so far. So I'm willing to bet that tomorrow they're either going to say, okay, this is just on this is just going to launch in Disney Plus, or it's going to be premiere access. Because I can't see them releasing a in theaters only movie this summer because we won't have enough vaccinated yet.
I could imagine them saying, hey, this thing is on Star. It's launching on Star. But when you open up your Disney Plus app, guess what you're going to see? Well, you know, those are really fine lines, right? Is mm-hmm. something in one place or the other when it's all just under one app anyway?
Also keep in mind that Disney's been scaling back a lot of what Fox releases and distributes going forward. They shut down Fox Searchlight. They shut down Blue Sky Animation Studios. They're condensing down and they're consolidating.
All right. So obviously Star's release is a big deal for some people. On the other side of it, there is just Disney Plus, which is trucking along. We have WandaVision reaching the end of its 9-episode arc in the next couple of weeks, where, you know, everybody is excited about this. It seems like the intensity for Friday is as high, if not higher, than it was for Mandalorian season 2, which was critically acclaimed as well. And you know, we got release dates for Loki today. We got what was the other Star Wars?
We got release dates for the Bad Batch today.
The Bad Batch,
which
as
didn't
well.
Really surprise. It didn't really surprise much of anybody. We knew something Star Wars had to be coming on May the 4th this year.
Right. So we have some Disney and MCU content being released. We also have a release date for the
Black Widow.
Black Widow. I was thinking Scarlet Witch, Black Widow. Sorry, Black Widow. So we have more information about what is happening with Disney this year. What is your take, Phil, on how Disney has done with its first 15 months of Disney Plus? Has it been, obviously the numbers, you know, prove out, right? 95 million, you said, subscribers, but are not necessarily all paying customers, that well surpass what Disney had expected. But from a content perspective, how is Disney Plus doing compared to HBO Max or Netflix? Where do you see it in the canon of streaming services right now?
I think you got to look at it from a couple different perspectives. One is that of you and me, just normal people who want to watch cool stuff. And then you got to look at it from the perspective of the company as well. I tend to care more about the first and less about the second. That's their problem, not mine. But it's weird because I will bounce back and forth between all of these services trying to find something I want to watch. Sometimes it's on Disney Plus, sometimes it's not. And that's even more so the case because we have that Disney Plus Hulu split that you won't quite have as much. You know, you have to wonder how much people are... Is somebody in Canada going to say, I would like to go watch this show on Star? Or are they going to say, no, I'm watching it on Disney Plus. That's the app I open.
Right.
At the same time, you got to say, hey, Disney Plus as a service now has about half as many subscribers as Netflix, which is, you know, no small shakes. And they did that in 15 months. There's no, you know, if anyone can do that, it's Disney, which is pretty incredible. Whether that continues or at some point there's just diminishing returns because everybody has this damn thing, I don't know. I mean, at some point it's got to level off, right?
I mean, at the very least, Disney has managed to, I think they found a way to cut down on the amount of churn that they have between, because like for CBS All Access, my dad will subscribe whenever Discovery is on and then end his subscription whenever Discovery is over. So, but for Disney Plus, it's a matter of, okay, WandaVision is going up until 2 weeks from now. And then 2 weeks after that, Falcon and the Winter Soldier starts. Whenever Falcon and the Winter Soldier ends, which I'm willing to bet is going to be around the beginning of May, that's when Clone Wars The Bad Batch kicks off. And then Loki comes the month after. Disney has figured out, okay, if we stagger all this content and if we make everything an episodic release rather than dumping it all at once, we can build up more hype for these shows. We can build up more demand for these shows and people will stick around. So that should help them as well.
What they're doing, and you're going to see more of this as time. I mean, the idea is to have something new and awesome on all the time, right? Not just once or twice a year. And I think that's the problem Disney Plus has had so far. When it launched, it was like, hey, here's all the cool stuff you've watched before. And if you want to watch it again, that's great. Here's The Mandalorian. And then we all just kind of sat there for a while. Really, you know, to a lesser extent, something like Soul, which was a big deal. But it's just not the same, right? It's a one-off movie. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. But it's not something that brings you back to Disney Plus week after week after week. And really, the name of the game for these streaming services is not unlike, actually, what you see in the mobile space. And that's just churn, right? How do we get these customers in the first place? How do we acquire them? And then how do we keep them? And if they leave, how do we get them back? There's a really interesting slide deck I saw out of some marketing presentation talking about churn. And you can see, you know, on the various services where things are churning and where they're not. And it was really obvious, you know, Apple TV Plus has the highest churn out of anybody right now because it's, you know, they have limited content and what they have is really kind of hit and miss. And you know, that's why they extended the free trials again. So, I mean, Disney, just like everybody else, is saying, hey, how do we minimize the churn as much as we can? And how do we space out what we're bringing to keep people here longer?
Let's shift a little bit to the other services. I think HBO Max was the biggest wild card in terms of whether people thought the move to expanding HBO Go and HBO Now into HBO Max would impact the quality of the new releases. I think this idea of diluting the core values of HBO, the core of its, how careful it was with every single pilot, with every single green light. I don't think that has happened. I think people have been relatively pleased with the original content coming out of HBO Max, at least from my perspective. Ara, I'd love to get your opinion on this because, you know, when you look at HBO as a brand, the biggest concern I kept hearing before Max launched was just that it's going to lose the je ne sais quoi that made it such a special, you know, a special outlet for particular kinds of adult, not adult, but like adult focused, adult oriented originals. And, you know, would the network that brought you The Wire and brought you Sopranos and brought you all of those amazing shows continue to be able to churn those out at the same rate?
Well, I mean, for HBO Max, it's also a matter of we're not seeing as many live action originals for HBO Max yet, but where they've been really hitting hard has been with the, like, the cartoons, like Harley, the latest season of Harley Quinn was a huge thing for HBO Max. And the fact that they get to shoehorn all this content in that was from DC All Access and HBO Max, which is great. I'm not sure how much longer DC All Access is going to live as a separate subscription, but I'm happy it'll land somewhere. We also, like, HBO Max is the only place that you can get any of the Miyazaki films streaming, at least in the US. I know that Netflix has it internationally. But HBO Max is also one of those, is a service that is right now limited to the US. It launches internationally this summer, and that's going to be when we can really start seeing, okay, how well is HBO Max going to play in the grand scheme of things? Because the US is just one market, and granted, we're a big market, but we're not the only market out there, and we're not the only one that is going to have clout. So launching internationally, and especially launching in South America, a place where not a whole lot of competition has been made in that space recently. It'll be interesting to see how they play, especially with Disney Plus amping up more and more in Latin America over the next 6 months with Star and the Star Live TV things.
Right. I mean, the inevitability of expansion of HBO Max, I guess the question is, if all these new markets are able to get the same content, how are these originals working out? I mean, the Flight Attendants, the Judah and the Black Messiah, the all of these shows that I think people are, or movies, I guess, as well, that people are looking forward to, but not necessarily in the same way as, I don't know, a new season of, like, I mean, in the past, maybe like a new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm or something. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. But I wonder if there has been that question or that impression of dilution since the network launched, and there has been such an expansion of content, not just from originals, but also, as you said, acquisition. Nobody's going to argue that bringing the Miyazaki films to HBO Max was a bad idea. I think it was a great idea, but it also is not something you would necessarily associate with HBO.
The bigger get there was Cartoon Network, for sure. And having all of the Cartoon Network stuff there, in addition to DC, which is where Cartoon Network is where DC animated shows have traditionally lived for the last decade or two, I believe. But having, like, HBO Max, we think, oh, it's just going to be all this adult-oriented content, and it's not. It's actually got a fair amount of stuff for the whole family. And having the same-day releases factored into the price, I mean, $15 a month is kind of high for a streaming service, but then you think, oh, they're launching at least one new movie a month, and I can see it the same day. So for the price of a movie ticket a month, I'm getting to see a brand new movie and not having to go into a movie theater,
mm-hmm.
which helps.
Phil, those same-day movie releases, that seemed a bit radical when it was announced at the beginning of the year, right? We have some expensive films. We're talking about, like, The Matrix 4 coming at the end of this year. We're talking about Godzilla versus Kong, Suicide Squad. Like, these are Space Jam. These are enormous productions that presumably would have received, you know, major cinema releases very widely across the US and the rest of the world. They still will to some extent. But how do you think this has gone so far? And do you think that it will stay past 2021?
Yeah, that's the big question. I mean, make no mistake about it. The power structure has changed hands. The flow of money is very different now than it was a year ago. There's no doubt that these studios have had to rethink, you know, revenue structures because of this. Again, I see that as their problem. We have this fight all the time internally, because I work with some really good, you know, dedicated theater goers. I enjoy the theater experience occasionally, but, like, I got to go to the movies to see this. I just don't like being around people and sticky floors that much. You know, for me personally, I love it. I love the fact that, you know, last weekend I watched Judah and the Black Messiah, which is, you know, never in a million years was a movie I would have gone to the theater to see for any number of reasons, right? Really, really good film. I have to ask myself, if it had come out on HBO in 2 or 3 months, would it have had the same effect? Would I have cared? Would I have even watched it? Or did I watch it now because it's in the news, because it's in my head? I don't know. It's a good question. I think, especially right now, it's still important to get the content out in front of people in a way that's safe. I'm not there for theaters yet. I'm not ready to go back. Maybe elsewhere in the world, it's a little less unsafe, but I'm not there, you know, yet for where I am. And then there's just what does Phil, the guy who likes to watch movies, think is the right thing to do? I think it would be do these simultaneous releases for the rest of time. I love it. And maybe that's where Disney's Premier Access kind of comes into it more. I'm not sure I want, you know, and it's the same question then, right? Like, how much extra would I have paid to watch Judah and the Black Messiah? Or Judas. Two very different movies. One's a weird
yes.
Black Panther Jewish mashup, and I would pay to watch that, actually. That'd be pretty awesome. I don't know. I don't know that I would have paid extra to watch it.
But would you pay less to have HBO Max without those same day releases is the real question there. Because, I mean, it's like, because...
I think we've been coddled for far too long for paying for content. I think $15 a month is perfectly fine. Especially when in 2021, and this was true for the past 2 or 3 years as well, all of these services, and we talked about it a minute ago with churn, all of these services make it as easy to cancel or at least pause, right, as they do to sign up in the first place. There should be no shame in saying, you know what, there's nothing I want to watch on this right now. I'm just going to stop it for a while till I come back. Like, that doesn't mean you're not loyal. That doesn't mean you're a bad person.
It means you're frugal. It means you're money smart.
It means you're not going to the restaurant just for the sake of going to the restaurant and spending money, right? It means you're going there because they have something you want to eat.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, we've all made changes to our lifestyle in the last year, inevitably. So corporations, which are people in the U.S., have had to adapt too. That is the very basic comparison. Disney's just a person too, you know. It has feelings.
Yeah, but they're a person who wants to have it both ways.
No, of course. And that's the thing, right? Today's announcement for Spider-Man No Way Home in theaters Christmas Day, in theaters only. That is a...
That's Sony.
Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah, that's Sony.
Yeah, Spider-Man is a Sony joint. Oh, you're right. It's a joint.
But it's Disney.
With Marvel.
I know how
you got confused. There was a Marvel Studios logo in the logo title that they showed. But yeah, that's a Sony joint. And Sony hasn't really been releasing as much.
Yeah, it's why you can't watch Spider-Man on Disney Plus.
This is confusing. I need a joint.
Yes! Welcome to my world.
Yeah, but doesn't Disney still co-produce the new Spider-Man movies as opposed to the Amazing Spider-Man, which was entirely Sony, right?
Well, Bader, you remember that big fight? I don't know if it was right before the pandemic last year or sometime in late 2019, but there was like a month-long period where talks between Marvel and Sony broke down and we didn't think we were going to get another Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland because they had reached the end of their current negotiations. And Marvel and they finally salvaged the deal, and that's why we're getting this movie. So yeah, no, this is still Sony still has those rights, and I don't ever see them giving up those rights unless Disney buys them, which doesn't really seem that feasible either.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking the difference between who makes the movie and who distributes the movie. It's the difference between, you know, Apple making the iPhone and AT&T selling it versus Verizon.
Okay.
Yeah, but also if I'm remembering correctly, has Sony doesn't have as many VOD. Which platform are they on for movies?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Wherever they want to be. Yeah, no,
they don't have a consolidated thing like NBC has NBC has Peacock because it's Comcast, Disney has Disney Plus, Warner Brothers has HBO Max.
Sony has PlayStation.
Yeah,
yeah. You
which
wish
is more people have a PlayStation than subscribe to.
Okay, I just want to put it out there. The first line of Crackle's Wikipedia entry is: Crackle is a video streaming platform owned by Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. I mean, what an amazing line of words that coalesce together to make a sentence. Like, unbelievable. That Sony sold them to Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. Anyway, yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot that Sony still had a hand in Spider-Man stuff. But it is an MCU property. It's still co-produced. It says Marvel on the fucking tin. So let's not be semantics.
I heard that.
I'm allowed to swear. It's my podcast. Let's move on. Let's talk about the others. So you mentioned Apple TV Plus, Phil. They've had a hard time of it. Ted Lasso has really been the only success story for Apple TV Plus. What is the next year for Apple TV Plus looking like in terms of releases? And when does it finally reach the point where, you know, Apple TV Plus is a household brand the way that Netflix is? Or does that never happen?
It's, you know, it's really hard to launch something new with content that nobody knows, right? This is all new original content, and some of it's pretty good. I love Ted Lasso. I thought it was just going to be, you know, Jason Sudeikis being Jason Sudeikis, and turned out I really enjoyed Feeling Good for a few hours. Who'd have thunk it? For All Mankind is pretty good. I mean, that's a Ron Moore show, and he makes really good stuff. It's a little weird at times. In the first episode of the second season, dragged out a little bit, but I love the premise. I love the idea, and it's really well done. The morning show, I couldn't make it through the first episode, but other people love it. So it's not for a lack of, you know, good, interesting content, but it's the same problem with everything else is, okay, what's next? What's going to keep you coming back? And they don't have this catalog of just other stuff that gets people in the first place. And that's a real problem. I imagine, you know, Apple has the money to buy stuff if it wants to, but
well, they whether did. They want they have- to or- all the Peanuts specials, right? That was the only place you could watch a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they have done that. But again, how many times are you going to watch that? Now, they're starting to get more in there, right? They're getting the Charlie Brown stuff. Where are the Muppets? The Muppets on Disney or are they on Apple?
Muppets are on Disney. They added Muppets show last week.
So it's a lack of content as much as anything else. I'm real curious to see if they extend the free trials again. That's just, it's funny every time they do it to me.
Just put it in the drawer with Ping and be done with it.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly. It's a weird thing. I get the idea, right? Apple has the hardware. They have the thing in front of your eyeballs to show you the stuff, and now they want to have stuff to show you. The problem is they just don't have enough of it yet.
Yeah, I mean, also, what's interesting is Apple TV as an app is necessarily separate, and that Apple is making all these deals with Samsung and LG to pre-install Apple TV onto their hardware, which we didn't expect, right? There's AirPlay 2 support in some of these new smart TVs. Apple TV just launched on Google or Apple Android TV. Sorry, a lot of TVs in this show.
The Apple TV app, which you need to watch Apple Plus on your Chromecast with Google TV, but not Android TV. It's like, I want to bang my head against a wall.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's very confusing.
But have you used the new Google TV, Phil?
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. Anyone who recommends this thing needs to, you know, go back and look at latency in the dictionary.
Yes.
Because it's just not good.
Somebody besides me says it. Yes.
I want an Apple TV 4K with the Chromecast with Google TV remote. Just give me the remote and I'll be happy.
Right.
So
it's
you
a
want
great remote.
I love
so
that
you
remote.
Want an NVIDIA Shield TV, Daniel?
No, because I like the Google TV interface. But I guess the NVIDIA Shield now has...
the Google TV interface is going to get it.
It'll come eventually.
Once
so yeah,
NVIDIA...
By
you try to tell me that...
It'll
that,
come
that,
as soon as NVIDIA finishes working out all of the kinks. Because NVIDIA is not going to let it onto its consoles until it's like, okay, you're putting the overview screen back. Because we need a quick way to four-stop apps.
Can you play Stadia on the NVIDIA Shield these days, officially? I don't know. Can you play Stadia on the NVIDIA Shield TV?
Not officially.
Not officially. I mean, come on. Like, just get your stuff together. Anyway, a lot of stuff, a lot of confusing TV acronyms are happening here. But just going back to Apple TV Plus. So Apple TV Plus is basically wherever you want it, right? You can get it on Roku, you can get it on your smart TV, you can get it on Google now, you can get it on your Apple products. It's everywhere you want it. The question I have, Phil, is the same question I had about Disney Plus, right? Apple is not going to greenlight an R-rated series, right? It's not going to greenlight stuff that is not necessarily, it's not about being kid-friendly the way that Disney Plus is, but it's about being family-oriented because that's an Apple mandate, right? This is Tim Cook shutting down the Gizmodo series because he didn't like how it would align with their culture.
So we need the Walton series remake, is what you're saying.
And I'm wondering, how does that look in terms of greenlighting shows or movies down the road? And will that necessarily change as Apple gets a bit more desperate for viewership?
Right, and that's the question. Like, and that's just a basic, you know, content strategy question. What do we want to have, and what do we want to give people? And are you going to let them eat cake, or are you going to feed them vegetables all the time? And there's, you know, that's a spectrum, right? You can find something in between, but that's a decision they're going to have to make. And I would imagine you see them, you know, lighten up a little bit at some point, maybe. On the other hand, it's Apple. Maybe they won't.
I mean, they banned all vape-related apps from their app store. So they like to paint with a broad brush for stuff like this. But
yeah,
we'll see. All right. What other services can we talk about, Ara? We have
Discovery Plus.
Okay, sure. Let's talk about Discovery Plus for exactly 1 minute. What is Discovery Plus and why should I spend, what is it, 10, 15 bucks a month on it?
It's in not. Addition, Discovery Plus is $5 a month, isn't know. It?
I have no idea what it is. It's where you watch all the home shows.
Yeah. Yeah, I might need a Mother's Day or Father's Day gift for my parents this year, I'm getting them a subscription to Discovery Plus so that way they can watch all their HGTV crap. Because whenever, like, that was the one thing my parents got hooked on when they had cable, and they've missed it ever since they dropped cable, is HGTV. And that is what Discovery Plus will offer them, is all of the seasons of House Hunters and all the seasons of Chip and Joanna and all that nonsense. I mean, the only thing I want to watch on Discovery Plus is the new episodes of Good Eats Reloaded and all of the seasons of Good Eats that I don't already own. It's a very niche market, but it's also one thing of, okay, we know what we have, we know who we're catering to, and we know what price they want.
According to CNBC, the most important series on Discovery Plus is 90 Day Fiancé.
Correct. Oh. You are absolutely correct.
Hurting my soul.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen it. I have heard, I've seen it memed a lot. It's a highly memed show, so for what it's worth.
I haven't watched it either, and I had to ask Stephanie Williams, one of our writers, about it. And she says, you know, it sounds awful. It is surprisingly good. It is surprisingly compelling. Yeah, you know, look, we look down our noses at unscripted TV, and we shouldn't. Because why is that any different than somebody watching, you know, animated stuff or watching Disney or watching Star Wars or anything else like that? And that's a home for it. And it's a big home for it. I think the really interesting one I'm looking at right now is actually Paramount Plus, which is going to be a rebranded and expanded CBS All Access. And it's a big deal for this reason, because it's a new brand. It's actually getting out beyond the walls of the United States. And so we're going to see it in more countries, and we're going to see that content in more countries. And thank God they finally landed on a branding for it. So we can all talk about one thing. That's going to be the interesting part. We'll just have to see.
So we don't know yet what Paramount Plus will have, because the investor day is today, actually, as we're recording this. So yep. It might be out by the time, it will be out by the time you hear this. But what are the expectations, aside from more Star Trek, which I'm always okay with? What does Viacom have that we want? What are the what's the IP that we can really dig into aside from Star Trek?
Comedy Central.
Oh,
that's the biggest thing I think of when I think of Viacom.
No, it's all kinds of stuff, right? So start with Paramount. Let's start with the name, right? That's a big deal. That is a huge, you know, movie studio, right? From years and years and years. You know, I'm just flipping through their brand page right now. BET, CBS All Access, that'll change. CBS proper, right? So here in the US. CBS News, CBS Sports, CBS Studios, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, Paramount, all the Paramount stuff. Showtime, Bellator, forgot about them. CBS Sports, so much CBS, oh my God, CMT. Pop TV, which is interesting. Smithsonian, which is a big deal. A lot of stuff in there as well. The CW, which some relatively large shows on the CW now. VH1, you know, they own VidCon, by the way. So, like, there's a lot there, and there's a lot that they're going to be able to take outside the shores of the United States with this. Mm. Plus, again, Star Trek, right? That's no small thing, especially with the new shows coming up.
I'm always excited for more Star. I loved most of Discovery season 3. I think it didn't stick the landing, but most of it was excellent. So, and Picard season 2, there's only one direction, and that's up, because it can't get much worse than that. But that's my opinion. I'm very hard on Star Trek. So, okay, there's Paramount Plus. It's arriving on March 4th, which is very soon. It'll be here before you know it. Then finally, there's Peacock. Peacock is this weird one because it's basically just the Office network, right? You get two free seasons of The Office. If you don't want to pay for it, then you get various amounts of The Office plus other stuff if you want it. Phil, why does anybody want Peacock right now if you don't care about The Office?
Yeah, that's it's kind of the bastard child of streaming services right now. They're trying real hard, and it's interesting because they have things like Premier League on there. NBC Sports is a big deal. I have technical issues with them. They are streaming soccer in 30 frames per second. No.
Oh, no.
No. Oh, my God. I was watching early games last weekend in 60 frames per second on NBCSN, and then I forget which game it was on NBC proper at 30 frames per second instead of 60. Like, what are you doing? And they're trying to get me to pay more for this? No. You know, they have other content as well. I watched Brave New World when it first came out. And it was really, that was a really interesting one. I guess before we started recording, we were talking about, you know, dirty movies and shows and stuff and the inequity of nudism, of nudity on shows. And it was really interesting that I didn't realize it, you know, it was going to be nudity in Brave New World. Like it was almost trying to be something it wasn't, which was interesting to me for like academic reasons for original content on a new streaming service. I just wasn't sure where they're going to go. But it's not coming back after the first season.
Yeah, you were interested in naked people for academic reasons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Bill, I know you.
Yes.
You can lie to the people listening, but you can't lie to me, baby.
And for the record, the naked person was not the kid who played Han Solo. Yeah, like it has potential, and it's not like there's a lack of NBC Universal content to put out on this thing. That said, NBC Universal is kind of spread all over the place a little bit. They still have a deal. Peacock is signing, you know, cross licensing deals with people with Viacom CBS as well. So you're almost getting diminishing returns at that point. Like, I'm just not sure there's something there I need to watch.
Okay, Phil, who owns what's left of the USA Network?
That is an NBC Universal joint.
If they put,
and that's actually. USA is about to get bigger and more interesting because they are shutting down NBC Sports Network and moving stuff onto USA.
If they have every episode of Night Flight, and I think you're old enough to know what Night Flight is,
yes,
put that on there.
Yes.
I will pay you $20 a month.
No, you won't.
Yes, I would. For that, I would.
You say that now. You can just send me $20 a month, and I'll pirate those episodes for you,
Jerry.
That's
because you're just a kid and don't know what Night Flight is.
I'll do you a favor.
We've had that experiment. Didn't Battlestar do that?
Galactica? What?
Yeah, one of the Battlestars did a streaming network that was just the property, and I think it lasted like 6 or 7 months.
They did. Yeah, they did.
I mean, there was a lot. There was also the Caprica show.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
I mean, that's Ron Moore. I actually thought about starting to watch Battlestar again, and I was like, should I do it again?
Yes, you should. It's so good. I think it's on... But see, that's the other weird thing about Peacock, is Peacock has a free tier and a paid tier, and there's a whole lot on the free tier, actually.
Yeah.
So as long as you don't mind ads.
Peacock sounds like it's just going to be a dumping ground for stuff that NBC doesn't want to license elsewhere, because it can probably make more money licensing its content to... everybody else.
Yeah.
I just want to know why they bought WWE. Why?
Why not?
People
it's
love it.
Incredibly popular.
But WWE had a perfect, like niche, but perfectly functioning streaming service. And I'm willing to bet that it's going to get shut down in order to put everything on Peacock.
I mean, if it brings eyeballs to Peacock, why, you know, I'm sure it'll be a subsection of Peacock then. I don't think they'll just put WWE content within the mainline app. That doesn't make sense. Who knows?
Who knows?
All right. What else can we talk about, Phil? What's next? What are you most excited about? Where can we leave this conversation?
I'm excited because there's more good content than ever. We just have to be willing to pay for it. And that's easy for me to say, right? I haven't been personally hit by, you know, 2020 anywhere close to what a lot of people have. So I appreciate that. But all things being equal, there's just more good content out there than ever. And yeah, we just have to be willing to pay for it, really. And not be afraid to pause and cancel when there's something we don't want to watch. And I think the biggest takeaway I've had in the past year of all this content is don't pay for a year at a time. I paid for like 3 years of Disney Plus, and I haven't decided if I regret that or not. I might regret having paid for a year of CBS All Access. I don't know. Haven't decided yet. But think about that.
That's a good point. All right. So I think we're going to leave it there because it's been quite a long and intensive discussion. Phil, do you want to stick around or are you going to get back to work?
I think I'm going to bail. I got Paramount stuff coming up here in a little bit. So this is going to be exciting. Sorry, guys.
All right. So hold on before you go, because we're not going to keep you. We're not going to have you at the end. We do our What's Making Us Happy segment. We're going to break it up. We'll give yours now. Anything that's making you happy, doesn't need to be tech related, that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, man. This time last year. So I have found myself, since I'm not traveling for work anymore, and I miss seeing all my work friends and I miss seeing all the places, but I don't miss the travel. I have ended up becoming the president of our little city youth soccer association here. And when I say little, I mean, 1,000 kids a season. It's not tiny. And we got literally 2 days of practice in last March before we had to shut down for COVID. And then we had a hurricane last September, which shut down our fall season. So I haven't had little kids out playing soccer in a year. And we are just about to get going again, and seeing them on the field and seeing the excitement of their parents and the excitement of the parents just to get the kids outside. It's a big deal. It's really cool. And it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy. And I'm finally starting to get used to that.
Oh, you're such a good dad.
You're all grown up, Phil.
That's really cute.
Oh,
well, good for you.
And I don't talk about this a lot because I don't think it's that big a deal, but old Phil hasn't had a drop of alcohol in more than a year now, which is pretty weird and incredible. But hey, good for me.
Yes.
Good for you.
Good for you, because it's only been a month for me and it's been hell.
I'd say it gets better, Terry. It does. It doesn't get better.
Well,
it gets better.
Amazing. Good for you, Phil. Well, thanks, man. This was great. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise and giving
Anytime
us some
I
insight.
Miss you guys.
Yeah. And, plug What to Watch for us quickly before you bail.
Go to whattowatch.com and read all the stuff about What to Watch. Some really interesting stuff. I don't think I mentioned it. We were talking about WandaVision and Stephanie Williams, who I mentioned earlier. She is just a genius with all this stuff. She's a huge comic book fan and, in fact, helps write comic book stuff. And reading her sidebars on WandaVision, it's just incredible. Like, I was like, are we watching the same show? Where did you get all this stuff? And there's just so much tucked into the comics and the backstories of these characters that you don't get watching the show that I understand now just having her explain it and writing about it and just, the pain of like Monica Rambeau and what she's gone through in the past and what she's going through now and how she's still kind of getting screwed over a little bit. And just stuff that you would never in a million years get by just watching the show kind of makes you see it in a whole new light. So it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Stephanie's work is amazing, especially on WandaVision. I've been learning a lot just like listening to her Twitter feed and watching and reading her stuff on What to Watch. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
All right, cool. So
thank you guys. It was good to talk to you.
You too. We're going to take a break and then we will come back and talk about some Android 12 stuff. So stick around. This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less. Cut down on grocery bills by saving up to 40% instead of shopping at your local store. HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet and your wallet. If you need proof, our own Jerry Hildenbrand just received his first HelloFresh kit the other day. And here's what he has to say about the experience.
I had heard about HelloFresh, but didn't really know what to expect. The box came on a day where my wife was home with me, so we both ran out and grabbed the box and brought it inside and opened it up. And here's all this food, and it's well-packed with big ice packs to keep everything cool in case it was a little warm outside. And on top, there were some, recipe suggestions that used the food that was included And my wife was looking through those while I was tearing into the food because I kind of really like food. Beautiful stuff. Chicken cutlets and salmon and couscous and some vegetables. Everything looked great. The meats were really fresh. They weren't frozen. They were really nice and cool like they would be if you had kept them in your refrigerator. Great cuts of meat. The meal we made was delicious. We had a herb chicken with couscous and the mixed vegetables, and it was delicious. It was like food you would eat at a restaurant. I'm surprised about how great the whole experience was, to be honest. I would definitely recommend it to anybody, and it's really worth a try if you've never used the service before.
So if you're interested in learning more about HelloFresh, head to HelloFresh.com/ACP10 and use the code ACP10 for 10 free meals, including free shipping. That's ACP and the number 10 all together. ACP10. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. All right. So if you came for the Android news,
I did.
We still have a bit for you. So thank you for sticking with us throughout that first segment. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, as I mentioned in the disclaimer last week, Android 12 Developer Preview 1 dropped mere hours after we finished recording last week. And it was not the visual overhaul that the leaks had suggested, but it intimated, it just hinted at that eventual visual update in many ways. And in the days after the release, our friends over at 9to5 at XDA, they dug into the code and they were able to reverse engineer a bunch of the features. So Jerry, you've had it on your Pixel 4 for a couple of days now. You've seen what the nerds have discovered. So what's your TLDR take on Android 12 so far?
I really think that Android 12 is at like 11 was, less about what you can see and more about what's going on that enables it, you know, things like contact conversation widgets and rounded corners. There are a huge amount of tiny changes all throughout Android and several all new APIs for developers. And it looks like that Google realized that, you know, it's got to get developers up to speed so the great apps we already have can become even more incredible. And, you know, tools like widgets that look good are one way to do it. New APIs that developers can use to make it so they don't have to write a mountain of code to do a thing because it's already built in. That's another way to do it. And it looks like that, you know, the people at Google have realized that Android is so popular in a huge part because of the apps. So they're focusing hard on that.
And what does that mean? I mean, you say they're focusing on the apps, but like, what is the substantive change that people will experience? Because providing developers better tools to build apps can have cascading effects for people using earlier versions of Android, right?
Sure, but Android 12 has actual new code and new classes and new APIs written in it to do things that before developers had to spend, you know, weeks, maybe even months trying to find a way to do themselves. You take all that busy work, dumb work, hard work, all three combined away and just give a developer an API that they can write one line of code and it taps into it. That gives a developer time to use the rest of the tools to make the app look good, make it more functional, and make it do things we like it to do. And this is something that Google started a while back. I really think when they started adding quick replies and worked that out so developers could use it in their own apps, that was Google realizing that, you know, there are a lot of cool things that we could have developers do. So let's try to make it easy for them. And today they just released a thing. It's called Jetpack Compose. And that's what I've been working on, writing a little explainer before with a podcast. And it's a new way to build a UI for an app. It's, you know, you don't tell the app how to look. You tell the app what you want to do, and it makes the app look a certain way. And that's, you know, gives a more cohesive interface. And that's going to be a big part of Android 12 and these new APIs developers can use. I wrote about one, and it seems like such a minor thing. There's a new API, and it's just called People. And it's you know, simple if you just look at it on the surface. But then if you look at what it can do, it's so entwined and shared. I mean, it does things like Google Play Games, messages. It does what WhatsApp can do. It does, you know, what Telegram does. It does a lot of what iMessage does. And it ties it all together, and a developer can use it with just a few lines of code. And, you know, the first thought is, well, that could make a great Messenger app. There's so many of those that we've already got a couple great ones. But what about games? What if you want to, you know, get together on your favorite RPG-style game and with all your friends and do a raid? That's what this is for. It ties everyone together for any app, not just communications.
So does that mean that somebody with Android 12 will have like a messaging identity, like a UUID, some way to sort of distinguish the phone or the Google account? Like, I'm trying to understand, because like Play Services and like the Firebase sort of does that already to some extent, right? By tying your Google account to notifications. So how different would this be?
This allows you to, instead of giving an app access to your address book, which you never want to do, never, ever. When Twitter asks you to do that, when you first install it again, don't. Just say no. But you can connect people to an app. And Google is the middleman. You can, like, these are my game friends. And you can tie it to the app. And it doesn't dig through your contacts. It's not, you know, collecting personal information. But it ties that person to that app. And on their phone, they can do the same thing with you. And I don't know exactly how it's doing it, if it's creating a unique ID or if it's actually using the Google account. I'm not sure how it does it, but it doesn't. It gives the user a choice. It gives the developers a choice. And in a way, it protects your privacy as well as your friends' privacy, but not wide open address book. And I'm amazed that it took this long to have something like this. And I'm amazed that nobody had ever thought of it before. This is, you know, iMessage, maybe you don't use it, maybe you do, maybe you hate it, maybe you love it, but the way it connects people together across any device running Apple software is really unique and amazing. The fact that you can use your phone and your MacBook at the same time is something that other secure and feature-rich chat apps aren't doing. This goes a step further where it's tied to your identity inside of Google. I'm trying to describe it, and it's difficult to describe. We don't know everything about it. We just know the APIs. Google's going to show off how it works. It, you know, Google I.O., you know, I'm sure it'll be a video thing again this year, online only. But Google will show us ways that it's been in use because there are no examples of it yet. But it just, seeing the tip of that iceberg makes me really interested in the iceberg underneath it. Besides that, it's more focused on privacy, and privacy does not mean Google will stop snooping on you. Privacy means that Google is finding ways it can snoop on you more anonymously. Google's whole reason for existing is to find out your habits so it can make sure you see the right ads. That's never going to change. But if they can do that without literally tying it to your name or to your Google account, and there are ways they're working on, if they can do that, that makes it even more private. I mean, people that don't want to see personalized ads and don't want to participate and let Google track them, I get you. I feel you. But you might feel a little bit better about it if it's done the way that the COVID-19 tracing apps that Google and Apple built and they shared ideas together, where you're not involved at all. No, you know, neither Google nor Apple knows your identity or has any way to track your identity. And it's because it's using unique anonymous IDs that you reach for instead of it's being pushed to you. And that's another thing they're working on right now for Chrome. It really looks like once they get it perfected in Chrome, it's going to move to Android. So a privacy increase is nice. Of course, there's, you know, millions of small patches to make things more secure and, you know, make apps more secure, take away some of these Wild West style things that apps can do. We see that every year. But I don't know what the Android 12 beta or the real release is going to look like on a Pixel phone. But those interface changes we saw, that's being worked on. It's being worked on to make that move and give those tools to developers so they can make their widgets and their apps look like those mockups. And maybe, hopefully, get a more cohesive design for all of those Android apps we love to use.
Okay, that's a couple of the bigger privacy changes. Another is that what we talked about last week, there are going to be indicators when an app is using your camera or your microphone in the background. That is coming. There were a whole bunch of little quality of life improvements that were dug up that aren't user-facing yet, but that through some reverse engineering, we've been able to find. There's a bit more padding in the notification bar. There's some new accent colors. If you turn on a flag, you can make your settings, it's called the Silky Home. I think that's just an internal name, but Silky Home flag enables this really one-hand friendly design and settings. There is a hint at a widget stack similar to iOS 14 so that you'll be able to flip through important, presumably Google-made widgets, but there could be an API that will allow other developers to do it. So you could literally flip between widgets as opposed to having a single widget that's a scrolling widget. That's really interesting, I think. There's a whole bunch of other small things like a built-in one-handed mode, which has been on, you know, Samsung phones for a long time, LG, but this will be built into Android natively. Scrolling screenshots, there's evidence that that is here now, but is not enabled yet. At least it doesn't work. You can edit the share sheet, which will be fun. You'll be able to tell which apps can show their media control notifications in the quick settings menu. So you'll be able to turn off, you know, Google or YouTube Music if you don't want it in there. Right. You can resize picture in picture. Videos, which is neat. You'll be able to like do some really cool things with haptics, which sounds incredible. From all of these kind of minor changes that were discovered, what was your takeaway from the first developer preview?
Well, a lot of the things that are coming, like we've seen hints at, okay, notifications don't look that different in developer preview 1. They're probably going to look different in developer preview 2 or 3 when more of these UI changes get flipped on. But right now they're buried and people had to really reverse engineer and go hunting for flags and do a lot of ADB commands to try and get them to work. And when they work, some of them seem like they're fairly well, they're further along in the development process already. And some of them are still like, okay, we can see where this is going to be, but it's definitely not working yet. I mean, of the ones that we saw, the ones that I love the most are the changes to the media notification, because now media notifications, the album art is bigger, so it's easier to just glance over and see what's playing. It's easier to tell where something is being played, and it's easier to change. Like, if I have my headphones plugged in, it's easier for me to tap it and send it to my smart speaker, or it's easier to just, like, have it play through the speaker if I'm playing a video and I want to show it with share it to my mom, who's sitting across the kitchen table from me. But also the fact that I can say, okay, I never want to see YouTube in the media previews and quick settings again. Because if I'm watching something in YouTube, I watch it, I'm done watching it, and I go about my business. I just want music apps up there. And I don't want to have to try and swipe 10 times to get that out of there. Because once a media app gets into the quick settings little panel up there at the top, it's very difficult to get them out sometimes.
Yeah.
A word of advice. Don't be disappointed when you don't see these changes or don't see them all. And the Android team has 4 or 5 months to get them all completed. If it's going to be an Android 12, they can't work right up until the last minute, because they need that time to fix the bugs they didn't see. I don't expect a lot of the stuff that the people at XDA found. I don't think it's necessarily for Android 12. It's just the beginning. We've got to get started. We've got to see how this would actually look. That's why you can enable a flag and see it, even if it's non-functional. But, you know, there will be some of these changes. It's just we don't know exactly which ones are far enough along to be included.
Oh, and we're not going to know until July, whenever they have, like, their last big developer preview, whenever they have the last real beta before August and stable, the August release candidate and then stable release. But and especially for the UI stuff, again, I mentioned it in an editorial or a week or two ago, and I think I mentioned it in the podcast last week. I'm not really expecting to see all of the theming stuff and UI stuff that they're working on. I'm not expecting all of it to arrive this fall. I think it's going to be like Dark Theme, where they put it in, they tweak it, and they tweak it, and something still doesn't work, and they have to yank it out and try again next year.
Right. So we know that this is the first of 3 developer previews. Then Google is committing to 4 betas from May, which will, if there is a Google I.O. this year, I think there will be, but it won't be in person. So they'll have a virtual Google I.O. similar to what they did last year, but they didn't brand it Google I.O. They just had, like, you know, X weeks of Android kind of thing. I'm guessing there will be a virtual Google I.O. because they've had a long time to prep for it. The beginning of that will have a keynote. During that keynote, they will announce the first beta. That'll be in May. There'll be 3 betas after that, with the final release sometime in September, if the timeline is correct or it doesn't change. So this is all super preliminary. I do not recommend anybody install this on their daily driver.
Oh, no.
There are a lot of apps that don't work properly on this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deprecated APIs that are just messing with existing apps. And Google doesn't encourage developers to actually push their apps with Android 12 or new Android APIs until well after the first developer previews. I think, like, the second or third beta will probably be when they do that.
Another thing, they're cracking down again on private APIs, which means I can give an easy example everybody understands. Split window. For the longest time, it started with one of the Galaxy Notes. You could have 2 windows on your screen. That's an idea that Google was toying with. Samsung saw it and decided they wanted to make it work because they had this phone with a huge, beautiful screen. They got it to work, but using Samsung's private APIs. Well, when Google brought it so it worked on every Android phone, Samsung had to scramble and use Google's APIs and still offer the same features because Google cracked down on the private APIs that were used to do it. They're doing the same thing this year. There's a list of private APIs. I'm not sure exactly what they do. They're probably very important to manufacturers that use them in their interface. So Google has to have a replacement for all of those. So your phone may take a little bit longer to get Android 12 than it did get Android 11.
And a lot of phones don't have Android 11 yet. So that's fun.
Yep.
All right, let's shift to the Pixel 5a. This is really early. We just got our first leak yesterday. But Ara, if the render is accurate, which, you know, Steve Heffer, I forget how to say his name.
Hammerstoffer,
thank you. I never remember his name. It's so bad. Is accurate, then it's basically going to be a Pixel 4a 5G2, right?
Yes.
Good.
That's fine. I think that's probably a good thing, but it's still super boring in the annals of, you know, hardware design. So what's your take on this?
Does the A series need to be super duper exciting? I mean, this is going to be a $400 phone that sells three or four times more than the Pixel 5 does in pure number and in terms of units sold. I don't need it to be super sexy, although please, for the love of God, if you have a color variant, don't hold it till 3 months after release again. I don't care if it's a boring looking phone, so long as it works well and it's priced good and it's going to get updated for a reasonable amount of time. The only downside to the Pixel 5a at this moment is going to be that it's not going to get updated as long as the Galaxy S21 or the Galaxy A series is, because Samsung is now committed to 4 years of security updates as opposed to Google's 3.
Google's going to come out and say that they're going to give security patches for at least 4 years, guaranteed.
Great. I'll stop worrying about it.
they have to now. I wouldn't be surprised if they do security updates for 5 years. Because
bring it on.
Because they can. Now that Qualcomm can do it, Google can certainly do it.
I mean, they definitely can, and I think they will. I think they let Samsung make the announcement, but this was absolutely coordinated.
Sure.
There's no way Google would keep the Pixel line at 3 years and Samsung commit to 4 when they're using the same hardware. This is absolutely a negotiation with Qualcomm that went on in the back end. I can't help with that. Yeah, you can't help me, Google. Not this one anyway. But yeah, I have no doubt that Google will have something to say about it closer to Google I.O. or at Google I.O.
Yep.
But I'm excited because we're finally, even if it's just 3 years of platform updates and 4 years of security patches, we're finally inching closer to that iPhone level of support that everybody's hoping for on the Android side.
And I think it's a better method because I remember when my iPhone 5S just would not run iOS anymore. And I liked the iPhone 5S. It was a Google Pixel 4 that ran iOS. It was felt perfect. I loved it.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where it was just a dog and I was tired of waiting for it to do anything. And that's because it got two platform updates too many. I would like to see Apple, you know, offer 4 years of iOS updates and then an extra 2 or 3 years of, you know, something akin to a security bulletin. Because that makes sure your phone still works the way it worked when you bought it or better.
Well, I know that Apple received a lot of guff for that and a bunch of subsequent updates. I think iOS 8, iOS 9 were more focused on performance and maintaining performance on older hardware.
And they beef the hardware up, so it doesn't matter as much anymore.
There's a lot more leeway. There's a lot more length in terms of SoC performance, right?
Yes.
There's just a longer window that those SoCs are going to be performant for now because they're just so far ahead of the competition.
That's why iPhone 12 mini has the same processor as the iPhone 12 Max Plus Ultra thingamabob.
the giant phone, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Speaking of giant phones, I will say there's the only thing about the Pixel 5a compared to the Pixel 4a and not the Pixel 4a 5G is that it's the XL size this year. Like, that's the only main difference between the 4a and the 5a.
Well, we don't
know
that.
Because the Pixel 4a was we do, because the 5a, the Pixel 5a leaks that we have all say 6.2-inch screen. That's the same size as the Pixel 4a 5G.
But leaks.
Because the Pixel 4a, this is true, but the Pixel 4a was a 5.8-inch screen.
Right.
So if they're opting for, okay, the A is going to be, we've realized that bigger is slightly better. Or if they're, I would really love if they would alternate between years. Like, 1 year the A is a small phone, and 1 year the A is an XL phone.
I'm sure Google has all kind of metrics that tells it which phones it should build if it wants people to actually buy them. I mean, I'm going to assume that somebody in Google wants people to actually buy a Pixel, even though sometimes it doesn't seem like it. And, you know, I don't know that the 4A 5G outsold the 4A. I doubt it because there's a price difference. But maybe Google thinks it can offer the bigger screen at a good price with a bigger battery and people will like it more.
I don't know. Between the Pixel 4a 5G having the Pixel 5 cameras and 5G, but not being $700, I'm willing to bet the 4a 5G did decently, especially because it got discounts pretty quickly.
I think this is about 5G, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think this is about providing the space inside the phone for the millimeter wave antennas that are going to be necessary. There's no way they're going to make a 4G only phone again, right?
Well.
So if that's the case, then 6.2 inches, making the phone bigger, making the space for the antennas, a bit bigger battery, that makes more sense. I think we're probably going to see like the Snapdragon 750 in here, which 750G, which will be not quite as fast as the 765G, which will maybe be, it depends on if there is a differentiator between the 4A and then, or 5A and 5A XL, if there is one. If there's just one this year, then it has to be more powerful than the 765G, which will be the 775G. Or maybe they'll just do the 870, right? Because the 888 is the flagship, and the 870 was the next, like the upgrade to the 865. Who knows? But I don't think you'll see the 870 in that price range. So it'll probably be the 870, is 775. Yeah, maybe. Okay, so whatever. We'll have way more about the 5A in the next little bit. But I think we're going to leave it there. And we're going to talk about what's making us happy this week. So, Ara, you go first. What's making you happy this week?
I baked pretzel bites this weekend. And I did it all by myself. And it took me less than 2 hours to go from sitting on my couch to sitting back on my couch eating pretzel bites. So that was cool. I found a recipe that didn't require it to like rise for 3 hours like most bread recipes do. And it was my first time doing a baking soda solution for pretzels on my own.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, I like love pretzels.
You got to share the recipe with me?
Sure.
Awesome. I need something to snack on during the day. I don't have like, I always find myself like,
I will say these are soft pretzels, so they will stale quickly if left out. So these are a bake them and eat them in like a day or two.
I can do that. I'm up to the challenge. Jerry, what's making you happy?
It's an app. It's an Android app. And it's a game. It's called Orwell's Animal Farm. And if you read the book, and if you're, you know, enjoyed the book, you will love this app. It's a game. And it's like a, you know, and in, on the PC, they call them walking simulators, where it's not a game. You're not shooting anyone. You're not trying to dodge anything. It just takes you from one scene to the next and gives you some choices. But it's very, very true to the novel by George Orwell. And it's that's one of my favorite novels. And when I saw Google actually surfaced it and recommended it to me, and I went ahead and installed it, and I love it. It's. I mean, I was playing with it when y'all were talking about Hulu and all that nonsense that I don't know anything about. And I don't know. Maybe it's a niche audience. Because if you haven't read the novels, I think you're going to think that, or novel. I wish there was a repeat, but there wasn't. You're going to be a little bit confused and think, man, this is weird. But if you're at all familiar with the novel, you should give this a try. It's, I don't know, what is it? Somebody who didn't install it, click that link.
It's like $5, I think.
Yeah, $5 or something. It wasn't very much. And I got way more than $5 enjoyment out of it.
All right. Very cool. Well, mine this week is another show. I just started it. I'm on episode 2. It's called 000. It's an Amazon Prime exclusive in most regions, except France, where it's on Canal Plus, and I believe it's on Sky in the UK. It's like a multi-country production. It's all about the drug war, the movement of drugs between countries. It's about mob bosses and distributors, and it's just a really interesting look at just how the movement of drugs works, particularly between Mexico, the United States, and Italy. Really well acted. Gabriel Byrne is the main English-speaking actor that people might know here, and he's very, very good in this. I really enjoyed the first couple of episodes that I've seen, and it's on Amazon Prime. It's really, really fun to watch. So that's 000.
That sounds fascinating to me, because that, you know, how you can move illegal goods without getting caught across the world is just, I never have any plan on doing it, if anybody's listening, but how it's done, you know, no matter what we think of, you know, governments think of to try to stop it, it still happens every day. And that idea fascinates me.
Yeah, I mean, it's fiction, let's be clear, but it's still a pretty decent look at how the whole thing works.
Probably based very much in reality, but they have to call it fiction because nobody wants to go to jail.
I don't know about that. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. And if you like crime shows, this is one of the better ones I've seen so far. All right, so that's our show for the week. I really appreciate Phil. Thank you for joining us for the first half of this show. If you haven't checked out What to Watch yet, I highly recommend it. He is at Phil Nickinson. Ara is at Ara Wagco. Jerry's at GB Hill. I am at Journey Dan. We are all at Android Central. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week. Until then, see you later.
Bye.
Adios.